All right. Here we are. Well, welcome, everyone. Welcome to Progressive Technology Projects Reverb Online Series. This is one of our first of our series, and the webinar today is Black Lives Matter, Behind the Scenes of a 21st Century Movement with Alicia Garza. Just a little bit brief, my name is Alice Aguilar. I'm the Executive Director of Progressive Technology Project. And a little bit about Reverb. Reverb is one of our programs here that focuses on how online communication tools can support both your offline and online organizing work. The series, as well as the program, highlights some of the importance of data, the skills that you need to use appropriate tools, thinking about using strategies to align your messaging, your communications, and technology to move your work. And these webinar series have content that sort of will help you do that. So today I want to thank Alicia for joining us today to have a discussion about Black Lives Matter and the social media tools and how they're using tools to build a movement. Alicia has been in the work for a long time. She's currently the Special Projects Director for the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and she is co-founder of Black Lives Matter. And I know that Black Lives Matter, the idea, been around for a long time, and Alicia, you know, we'll talk a little bit about sort of the evolution, and we'll start with that. But I want to pass it over and say welcome, Alicia. Thank you for being here, and want to see if there's anything else you would like to introduce yourself.
No, you did a great job. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you. Great. So I guess we'll get started, and what we'll do is we're going to go through a question answer session, and if there's any questions that folks have, but for now, let's chat the questions in your chat box, and then I can try to field the questions as we move along with time. So let's start. Alicia, why don't you just talk, you know, give an overview about, you know, the evolution of Black Lives Matter, you know, the inspiration behind it, you know, and how it's sort of becoming now this it's gone viral, right? It's gone from local to national to global. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So first, I just want to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for having me, and also thank you to all of you who joined today. The easiest way to talk about kind of the evolution of Black Lives Matter is to really talk about the context in which this idea emerges. So, as Alice said, Black Lives Matter is not a new idea, and in fact, it didn't even necessarily just start with us, right? It's kind of born in the context of a very, very long trajectory of Black folks who have been fighting for self-determination, for freedom, and essentially to be treated as humans in a world that dehumanizes us and has done so for generations. For me personally, I'm a child of the 80s, and so I'm somebody who came up in a time of intense conservatism, right? A big kind of shift from kind of a society and a social struggle that fought to win gains for not just Black folks, but for all kind of oppressed and exploited people in this country. And my kind of upbringing is in a time when the conservative right really kind of had a concerted push against many of the gains that folks had won through struggle. So that's the context in which I come up, and also the context in which these ideas emerge. Again, because, you know, ultimately, when we talk about why we have to say things like Black Lives Matter, it's because of the fact that the state has really waged a very intentional and intense assault against Black folks who have been kind of fighting for liberation, right? And so the forms in which that has taken over time has been the real intentional dismantling of social movements, again, the rollbacks of gains and basic rights for people, for workers, for women, for queer folks, right, for immigrants. And then it's also really in the context of folks really fighting back against state violence. And the way that we talk about state violence is really as structural racism. So Black Lives Matter emerges during a period when there is a real kind of uptick in what we call extrajudicial killing. And extrajudicial killings is a big fancy way of saying that folks are kind of killed on suspicion of committing quote-unquote crimes, right, but never actually going through the process, the democratic quote-unquote process of figuring out whether or not people are actually at fault. And so we saw this, of course, with Oscar Grant, who was killed just a few blocks from my house on New Year's Day. I think it's 5 years ago now. We also saw this, of course, with the killing of Trayvon Martin, which is a murder that made national and international news. But, of course, we know that these types of killings didn't start with Oscar Grant or Trayvon Martin, but certainly captured the world's attention once it became kind of publicized and broadcast, not only on television, but through tools being used by the Internet. So, you know, I would say that Black Lives Matter is really a response, right, and a call to action. Mm-hmm. And when we kind of coined this idea, the kind of purpose behind it, right, initially was just a response to things that I was seeing on Facebook and on Twitter in response to the acquittal of George Zimmerman for the murder of Trayvon Martin. And, you know, I very personally felt that the kind of social responses that were emerging after George Zimmerman was acquitted were not responses that were adequate. So what we were seeing were things from cynics, right, folks who are socially conscious, who were saying things like, okay, well, the system is working exactly how it's been designed, and why are people surprised that Zimmerman was acquitted? Which, of course, we agree with, right? We know that the criminal justice system has always targeted Black and brown people and poor people in particular, but that didn't feel right to me. To have just that response in the aftermath of a family who lost their child for no reason. And then the other thing I was seeing a lot of were responses from folks who were saying, you know, yes, this is a horrible tragedy, and this is a miscarriage of justice, and that's why we need to do things like vote, or that's why we need to do things like get a better education, or pull up our pants, or not wear hoodies. Mm-hmm. And all of those responses were really things that were blaming, I felt, things that were blaming Black folks for conditions that we didn't create. And so Black Lives Matter really started as a love note to Black folks who are constantly inundated with messages about how not human we are. And then, of course, that has real implications in real life, right, where we know there's over a million Black people who are locked in cages. We know from the Malcolm X grassroots movement, for example, that every 28 hours, a Black person in this country is murdered by police, vigilantes, or security guards. And we also know that Black folks, by and large, are at the losing end of almost every disparity that you can think of. And so, you know, Black Lives Matter, even though it's a very simple and somewhat obvious statement, really emerged, again, as a love note to our folks and as a call to action. Patrice put a hashtag in front of it.
Yeah,
and said, we need to create a national organizing project to address the impact of violence in our communities. And then Opal Tometi, who is another co-founder of Black Lives Matter, she helped to build, almost single-handedly, to be honest, our social media platforms as a way for us to kind of connect people online to take action together offline.
That's great. Thank you, Felicia, for that. It's really interesting because, you know, especially with the history and everything that's happened really recently and how quickly things have escalated, you know, through your love letter initially on Facebook and then all the responses, the quick responses using Twitter, you're really able to capture the moment, right, and quickly, as well as capture the hearts and minds of people, right, which is, I think, how using social media is really an important factor, right, in trying to build a movement. Could you talk a little bit about your thoughts about hashtag activism, and maybe you have maybe some advice on how folks should think about using hashtag activism if they're really serious about building engagements, you know, building their base, building a movement. Any advice or thoughts about that?
I have tons.
Of course you do. And we'd love to hear it.
So the first thing that I want to say is that we don't actually engage in hashtag activism. Mm-hmm. But the way that Black Lives Matter went from something on social media to something that was real and tangible in people's communities is actually based on a core set of things. So one is that Black Lives Matter really got transported, I guess I could say, through the relationships that we all have together. Many of us are organizers. All three, Patrice Vogel and myself, are organizers and have been organizers for more than a decade. And then when we talk about kind of how did it get both into local communities and then how did it kind of get, how did it reach out into becoming an international movement, really it's based on relationships and people who know people, right? Mm-hmm. And sharing that with folks. It's based on the ground organizing, right? So the way that Black Lives Matter actually got out into the world was in some ways from, sorry y'all, there's a huge motorcycle driving through my house. In some ways, it's, you know, when we coined that term, we then took it out into our communities during demonstrations that occurred after George Zimmerman was acquitted. And then folks mm-hmm. began to use it as an organizing principle. So the way that it's gotten out into the world has actually been through on-the-ground organizing. And then the other thing that I think is really, really important here is this piece around communications and messaging, which is also a very fundamental and core piece of direct action organizing, right, where we are trying to change hearts and minds, and we're trying to win hearts and minds. So the reason that I say, you know, that we don't, my goodness, you asked it. The reason that I say that we don't engage in hashtag activism is because, you know, putting a hashtag on Twitter or on Facebook doesn't actually spur people to action. And the whole purpose of a hashtag, right, is for people to be able to join the conversation. So it's not to denigrate what hashtags are used for, but it certainly is not the end. It's a means to getting to where you want to go. So the other thing that I just want to point out and say over and over again is that nothing replaces on-the-ground organizing, and that we should look at hashtags and social media and the Internet as vehicles to help facilitate that, but we can't actually organize online, right? And this is maybe a bit of a debate in the field, right, because there is a lot of conversation around e-organizing, right, and things like that.
Yeah.
And getting people to click like on something is not necessarily the same as building power, right? And that's fundamentally the point of organizing. And so that's why we make that distinction. However, social media is a very, very important way to frame the things that you care about. It's a very important way to communicate who you are, what you're about, and what you want people to take action on, and to give them a way to do so. And it's also a place where people can connect, and especially people who are unlikely allies. And this is an important component of organizing, I think, which is, we always say, you can't just talk to the people who agree with you, right?
Right.
You have to actually engage in the battle of ideas. And social media is a place where that is happening all the time. And some of you may have had good or bad experiences with that. But fundamentally, right, social media is a place where people can have debates and shape ideas. And it's a place where people can come together across geography, across ideology, right, and do something together, right? It's also a place where people take risks that they may or may not take in their everyday lives, right? The very worst of social media that we see, right, is that people say and do all kinds of things, right, because they can almost do it anonymously, right? But the very best of what we see is that folks can be inspired to do something and take risks that they may not normally take or that they're not actually being asked in their everyday life to take.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to kind of make those core points because I do think that there's been a lot of criticism in this moment, right, about quote-unquote hashtag activism, quote-unquote using social media as a way to replace organizing. And I do think it's important to make the distinction that we shouldn't denigrate these tools because, in fact, they've been extremely helpful to social movements all over the globe. And there are big threats to the Internet because of how successful it's been in connecting people who are separated by all kinds of things. But at the same time, we should always keep in mind that nothing replaces a face-to-face conversation. Nothing replaces the work that we do in our communities to build relationships and build political power. That's what's ultimately going to change the things that we don't like.
Yes, those are super important points there, particularly about how social media, you know, is a place to, it's a great way to frame, you know, the questions, the ideas, the messages, but also it's a place where, you know, where we can meet people where they are and where they are communicating, you know, how to get the information and the discussion out to various, like you're saying, other folks that may not be your base, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reaching out outside of that. But yes, not a replacement. Social media is not really a total replacement for the on-the-ground organizing, but it's, I love that point you made. It's a means for getting to where you're going, and I really like that thought, so keeping that thought in mind.
I want to give you guys a brief, sorry to interrupt you, Alice, but I want to just tell you who is in these pictures that you're seeing right now.
Yes, that'd be great.
On your left-hand side, my sister here with her fist up, that's Brittany Farrell. She is a St. Louis resident and a co-founder of an organization in St. Louis that is called Millennial Activists United, which is a women-led, queer-led organization that is doing on-the-ground organizing and power building in St. Louis, Missouri. And on your right here, who you see is another St. Louis resident, Tess Poe, who is a co-founder of he's a co-founder of an organization called Hands Up United. He's also an artist. He's a rapper and a really brilliant brother. He's actually also a labor organizer and has been also, alongside Brittany and many others, on the front lines of ensuring that Black Lives Matter, not just in St. Louis, but around the world.
It's great. I have to say that I looking at the images, you know, again, we are talking about social media, right? That how important images are, you know, as part of your, you know, your outreach, you know, using these social media tools. These images are beautiful. and they're eye-catching, and they really sort of, you know, you could just sort of see the activity, the energy, the, you know, that sort of comes out of the picture. So images are so important when it comes to social media, because, you know, people just, I always think about the blink test. What do you see at the moment? And also feeling like, wow, I wish I was there, or wow, I am there, right? So it's great. So I'd like to move on. And folks, on the webinar, please feel free to chat any questions in the chat. We will have time to talk at the end where you can vocalize your questions. But I'm going to keep moving here. I want to get down to some of the nuts and bolts. But if you do have a question, please chat it, and I will look at it and then bring it up for Alicia to respond. So, Alicia, let's talk a little bit about, I want to get down to the nuts and bolts here. Can you share the tools that you use, the tools and the technology that you used for Black Lives Matter, moving this campaign, and, you know, what made you choose those tools and who you were trying to reach?
Sure.
Great.
So let me start backwards, which is
okay.
Who we were trying to reach. Yeah. So who we were trying to reach initially was Black folks, right? And this was important because we really, really deeply believe that if we are going to have a better world, that we need to all contribute to rebuilding a vibrant Black liberation movement in this country. And so we were targeting Black folks who, in particular, both have an analysis and an assessment about why the world doesn't work for us, right? But may or may not be part of formalized organizations or formalized movement building activities. Now, this is important because I think there's a question about knowing your audience and knowing what it is that people care about, and also using these tools to learn more about what it is that people care about. Now, we started this because we resonated with a set of ideas, and we had connections with each other, but we also had a set of shared experiences. So Opal is the daughter of Nigerian immigrants. Patrice and myself are Black queer women. And so we have all been developed in a tradition that is a freedom tradition, but we have some challenges, right, within our movement, which include a lot of the things that we're fighting against, right? So sexism, the kind of nature of, well, I'm not going to call it racism, right, because there's a whole conversation we can have about that. But I will say the impacts, right, the impacts of internalized racism. I think we have also struggled with the impact of homophobia and patriarchy on our communities. And so we really wanted to build and create safe spaces for Black folks who also wanted to be a part of a freedom tradition, but for whatever reason, right, have at times been excluded from that or been made to feel not welcome. So that's who we were targeting. And the idea behind that, right, for us was we can't leave people behind, right? That if we are going to be successful, that we need to make sure that we are including the people who have been marginalized for a very long time. We use Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, and then we eventually built the website. It started with a Facebook page and a Tumblr page. And Facebook, we decided to, I mean, I don't know if it was a conscious decision. We're all very active on Facebook, and so that's a big way that we communicate with each other and with our folks. And so, and Facebook has a lot of currency, right? And there's a reason for that.
Right.
Facebook is a place where you can pretty much learn everything that's going on with anybody you ever wanted to. It's a place where a lot of people get their news, right? Facebook and Twitter. And it's also, I tend to say that Facebook is kind of like a Word document, right? You can write paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs about anything that you want, okay? So we actually built a page for Black Lives Matter that was a space for us to share articles and news of interest, a space for us to make announcements, a space for us to share analysis, a space for us to frame, right? And it was a space for people to connect to each other, because a lot of what was happening when we coined Black Lives Matter, people that we knew were reaching out to us directly by text, right, or by email, saying, hey, I have this great idea, and I'm wondering if you'll work on this with us. And we were like, yeah, we want this to happen. We are just three people, and I bet you there's somebody else out there that has the same idea and would love to work with you. So Facebook was really an opportunity for people to connect to each other and to share ideas and to actualize them. So we would get inquiries about doing curriculum, right, for Black students in high school and middle school about self-love, right? And we would hear that from five or six different people. And so if they were on Facebook, we would say, hey, y'all, you don't know each other, but now you do. You should connect. You all want to do the same thing. Twitter, on the other hand, is not a Word document. It is a place where you get really short and quick bits of information. We started our Twitter page at the same time that we started our Facebook page, but to be honest with you, we didn't actively use it until much, much later, right? At least a year and a half after we started the project. And mostly that is because Twitter is such a fast-paced environment. It's very, very hard, unless you already have an existing community on Twitter, to really keep up with what's going on. What you can do is get quick bits of information really quickly, and it's a really good way to bring people into whatever you're doing in that moment. So Twitter we use to, for example, talk about what's happening in meetings. So a great example of that is just recently, I was, on behalf of BLM, invited to a meeting with the Attorney General in Oakland. And, you know, without going into all of it, it was very disappointing. And it was a kind of quote-unquote closed meeting invite only. But there were a lot of other people that needed to be in that room and needed to have their stories shared. So we used Twitter as a way for us to kind of ask people, what is it that you want the Attorney General to know? And then also to communicate back out what were the conversations that were happening in that meeting, and to really share critique and analysis. So that has been really useful. And then people, of course, create storyfies from that, where you can kind of go back and see all of the things that folks said about a particular topic. Let me say this as well. Our Tumblr page, Opal designed and really kind of built the strategy behind it. And folks that want to go deeper about how that happened and what to do should definitely be in touch with her. And you can do that just by emailing us at blacklivesmatter@gmail.com. But the Tumblr page was really used as a place for people to share their stories and experiences. And it's a little less public, I will say, than Facebook. Now, the reason I say that is because Facebook really kind of keeps your entire history of engagement, right? If you go on someone's Facebook page, you can really see everything, or a lot, I should say, of what they've done since they joined Facebook. Tumblr is really, can be more of like a one-off, right? So people can share with relative anonymity, which is really important, especially when you are asking people to be vulnerable, right, and to share what their experiences have been under state violence. The other thing I wanted to say quickly about preparation and planning is that we knew that we wanted to use these various platforms for a set of different things. We knew who we were targeting, and we knew ultimately what we wanted the end goal to be. But we also left a lot of room for experimentation and for adjustment, right? And I think this is really important. Now, as an organizer, I know that what we can tend to do, right, is create really, really great plans, really, really great plans, and then not use them at all, right? And in fact, we spend so much time trying to predict what is going to happen that we're not actually present in the moment when things are happening. And then, of course, what that results in, right, is us being a little bit too rigid and not nimble or flexible enough to respond and adjust to changing conditions. And conditions are always changing. So, for example, right, one challenge that we face with our Facebook page, and you all should go on and kind of check it out, and it actually gets kind of overwhelming because our goal with that page, again, was as a space to share analysis, to share topics and ideas that are relevant to Black folks. And, you know, there was a period, particularly right after Mike Brown was killed, where our Facebook page was really overrun by trolls. We kind of kept it open so people could kind of comment and share with each other and connect with each other. So it's not a private page, right, because we wanted it to be as open as possible. But, of course, with all that openness, right, you get a whole bunch of stuff. we get death threats to our Facebook page. We get a lot of racist and ugly comments. And then what we see sometimes is people kind of attacking each other. So it is really important to also make sure that when you're thinking about how to use some of these tools, that you're aware of both the benefits and the pitfalls, and that you do have a plan and a strategy for how it is that you will address what can also happen with an open forum, which is that, you know, people can act all kinds of crazy. So just be aware of that and be mindful of it. I will also say, and then I'll wrap this up so we can get into more of the nuts and bolts, that, again, we really wanted to communicate what we were about, and also create space, right, to be able to expand on our vision, on our organizing, right, and to be mindful about what is also real about social media, which is that it's heavily monitored. And, of course, folks know, right, there has been and will probably continue to be a very long fight to keep the internet open and to keep people from being criminalized for using their right to free speech on the internet. So that's just something that's important for people to know and understand as you're thinking about how to use some of these tools. It's a great place to connect people. It's not a great place to discuss your plans or your strategies. And that's very, 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 very important to understand. For example, a lot of people use Facebook Messenger like it's your email. But you should know that Facebook Messenger is heavily, heavily monitored. It's both monitored by people at Facebook, and then people at Facebook and Facebook the corporation has partnerships with the FBI. Right? So it is very, very important for people to be mindful. And this is why we say, right, that we don't organize online, right? We connect people online and we use these tools to connect people so that they can get together offline and take action together.
Thanks, Lisa. Those are very, very great points. Important points to think about as you're thinking about social media. And things I want to lift here is that what's wonderful is that you really thought through, you know, thinking overall first about what is your goal in using these tools, who is your audience, that was very clear, and then as you're thinking about what tools to start with first, you know, starting with the Facebook, which totally makes sense, right, because that's where everybody's at, and then starting to incorporate these tools as it makes sense for the work that you're doing, and using them at appropriate times, like you're saying, the Twitter, you know, at appropriate times when you really needed some movement or action, but it is a way of being agile. So I have this question, right? So you're using all these tools. what kind of capacity, people, time, resources, did it take to keep this, you know, sort of keep up with it all, as you're saying there's so much happening? Like, what did that take, and, you know, how did you handle the timing or posting or updating, you know, also in with all the other on-the-ground strategies that you're using? But just, like, what did it take to all do it, like people, time, your time?
It takes a lot. It takes a lot. It takes an entire team. So this is also really important. It's what we learned, and what I learned in particular, is that the way that I use social media is very different than using social media for a campaign. And so it's just important to understand that. So one of the great things about social media is that it's portable, and you can pretty much access it anywhere. So, you know, for the first couple of months, I guess, I would say, it was really a small team of us. It was myself, Patrice, and Opal, and then Opal had a small team that was supporting her. And quite honestly, it's a lot, right? It's a lot to keep a page active, to keep engaging people, to respond to the inquiries and requests that you will get, and it is important to do so. You do need a whole team of people who are thinking about it, one, who are looking for things that are timely to share and to expose, right? And our team who manages all of these platforms has grown. So there are people all over the country who use our platforms, right, and who monitor them, who make sure things don't get out of hand, who use them for their on-the-ground organizing, right? So the other thing I guess I would just lift up from that is that, you know, once you build out these types of platforms, be very mindful that, one, they're not proprietary, right? So for the controllers, I'm a controller. For the controllers, you will have to learn how to let go. Right, because what's important about using these tools is that they stay active, and that's way more work than one person can do, unless that's the only thing that you do all the time, which for many of us, it's not. So be thinking about how you can create openness for the use of those tools in your campaigns, meaning can your members access the platforms? Do they have the passwords to access it? Can they share on it? Can they engage with people on it? Be thinking about who else might need it and use it, but also just be very clear about what your guidelines are, right? And make sure that you have them, because nobody, there's nothing worse. I mean, there are tons of things worse than this, but as a figure of speech, there is nothing worse than a page that is, you know, not used,
right?
Or a page that is used too much. If you are like me and get notifications to your phone and maybe like something one time, and then you get, you know, every time somebody puts something in that page, you get a notification, right? Of course, you can turn those off. But the point is, right, there's a very delicate balance of not going overboard, right, making sure that you keep the openness so that there's access from many different sides. And that you have a team of people that can help support you in using it.
Yes, that's definitely great advice, having a team of folks that are pretty much on the same page, understand what the, you know, the goals and the ideas and how to respond, and again, keeping it open, right, so folks can engage. I do have another nuts and bolts question. Just curious, because you're asking folks to sign in, you're asking folks to, you know, you do have a website, you do ask to join or get active. How are you using data that you're collecting, or the information that you're collecting through the tools, to continue, you know, engaging people in the conversation, or engaging maybe in other work, the ongoing work that's on the ground? Just curious your thoughts about that.
So we use data in a bunch of different ways, and I'm just going to highlight two. So one thing that we do for example, with our Facebook pages, we monitor what our reach is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And reach can kind of fluctuate, right, based on both how much you use the page, right, and then how interested people are in what you're sharing. So it gives us a really good idea of what resonates with people. We use the page to test messaging. And so, you know, we know when our reach grows, right, that there's something happening. And it may not even be something that we did, but something in the world is going on that is directing people to this site, right? For example, when we started our Facebook page, I think the maximum amount of likes that we had was something like 3,000, right? And it took us a while to get there. It took us a while to get there. And then when Mike Brown was killed, and folks in St. Louis started using Black Lives Matter, our reach went up exponentially, right? And some of that was that we were using the Facebook page to facilitate organizing, right? So the Black Lives Matter Freedom Ride that we did was both announced and coordinated, right, in some ways through our Facebook page, which helped to kind of expand its reach. We also created a BLM International mm-hmm. Forum on Facebook that also kind of helped to expand our reach. But when folks started using it in St. Louis, right, and then that message kind of was seen in photos on TV, on Twitter, on Facebook, people started to find us and like the page, right? So I think at our highest thus far, we've had a reach of 500,000 people, right?
Wow.
Right, which is a big, big leap from 3,000 likes. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what's important in terms of, you know, I mean, the goal, quite honestly, and I don't know if people will tell you this, but I'm just going to say it. The goal is not to trend, right? The goal is not to be popular. The goal is to reach as many people as you can. And so that's how and why we use that kind of data to really understand, okay, how is this resonating with people? And how are people using our, how are people using our forums and our tools? The other thing that I think is just useful, right, is that we get a lot of requests through our website, our Facebook page, et cetera. And what's helpful about that is it's actually a way for people to contact you and for them to share with you what they think, right? So in addition to all the trolls that we get, we also get a lot of people who want to share their stories through personal messages, and maybe not in such a public forum, but they want to share. We get requests from families who have lost their loved ones to state violence to support them, right? And we get that through our website, through our Facebook page, sometimes through Twitter. and then, you know, we also get interesting feedback, right, from our community,
right,
about what they like, what they don't like, what they want to see more of, right, what they have questions about. So it's a real good way to be able to engage people and also just get a sense of where people are at, right? So those are the two ways that I think we talk about how we use the data that we collect. We don't actually collect a lot more data than that. And the reason being, right, that we want to use it as a way to connect people. We want to use it as a way to understand what's resonating with people. But we don't use it to track people. And that's kind of different than some ways that folks use it. You should be thinking about, in your organizing campaigns, you know, what is the type of data that you want to collect? What do you want to use it for? And you should also be thinking about how can we stay in touch with people? What is the mechanism that kind of allows us to get to people offline? That's a really, really important thing because, again, right, Facebook is not going to help you build power. Face-to-face mm-hmm. relationships will help you do that.
Right. That's a great point. And I like what you said. The goal is not to trend, but it's being able to reach out. It's the reaching out to more people and then doing the the on the ground work to build those relationships. That is definitely key takeaway. There's so much here we could be asking, but I want to spend time because of time here. I want to open it up for questions. Feel free to chat or, turn on your phone, unmute yourselves, and let's ask Alicia some questions that you may have. So let's take the time right now to do that. Any questions from the field? You can just say your name and your organization and then ask your question, or you can, again, chat. The question is fine as well if you're more comfortable with that. Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm taking a look if things are starting to come in. All right. I have a question. I have one question here from Reese. The question here is how big is your moderation team? I'm assuming that's the team who's sort of moderating and focusing this. And how did you build that infrastructure?
Great question, Reese. Thank you. So our team is rather sizable, but it is a national team. So in some ways, it really... When you're thinking about how to build a moderation team, you should think about it in terms of the geographic scale that your organizing is trying to impact. So if your organizing is mostly local, right, you might want to think about kind of who in your local area can help support you. Our team is, it's immense. I don't actually know how many people are on our team because our tools are very, very open. So just for context, Black Lives Matter is a network now that is organized in 26 cities, including Ontario, Canada, and also folks are organized in Ghana, right? Not everybody in our network has access to our social media tools, meaning they don't have the passwords and the logins and all of that. But we have, I would say, at minimum 10 people that have access to our platforms. And can bring other people in as needed and as necessary. I should also say, just to be totally honest, people aren't monitoring it every day. So, we don't have that kind of capacity, right? It might look like we do, but we don't. But we certainly do open it up when folks want to do things like Twitter chats, when folks want to have particular types of conversations. And so then just to talk a little bit about how we built the infrastructure, it's literally about asking people if they want to participate and how they want to be involved. So building a team, right, is not unlike organizing in that you bring people together, you share your vision, right, and then you ask people to help think about how we get there together. For us, right, when we became organized as a network, right, and that really came out of the Black Lives Matter Freedom Ride that was organized by Patrice and Darnell. They both have extensive networks of folks who have particular skill levels around particular things and really became invested in the kind of mission and vision of Black Lives Matter and then offered their services, right, and said, hey, I have skills in communication. I'm a blogger. I'm a journalist. I'm a cultural critic. And I want to help support, right? And so I think in terms of thinking about how you build your team, think about folks who are also invested in the things that you care about and that your organization cares about. And then think about a role that they could play or ask them what role they would like to play or, quite frankly, just ask them if they would help you.
there you go.
It sounds really simple. I know it's a difficult thing, but that is how we built. That's how we built our infrastructure. Literally, people saying, "I really believe in this, and I want to support you. How can I be involved?"
Great. Thanks, Alicia. I have a budget question, so I'm just sort of picking through things here. I got another question from Lori, and she's asking, how do you handle the negativity you receive from the public. So you did mention something in Facebook. I'm sort of adding on to your question. You did mention sometimes you get, you know, all sorts of crazy or responses on your Facebook. But on anything, like on any of the social media, how do you handle that? How's your team handle that?
So there's a couple ways. So one is to expect it. Don't be surprised that it comes, right? Because if you, as powerful as the idea is, right, it's also very threatening. And so just expect that. The other thing that I think is really important is, and, you know, this is an old adage, right? You don't have to attend every fight that you're invited to, right? So what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times, people will say stuff just to get a reaction out of you. They want to engage you. And so you really do have to make strategic decisions about, you know, what am I going to get into and what am I just going to leave alone, right? You should know, right, that engaging negativity is a bottomless pit. And it is important, and I am certainly guilty of this, where I want to engage everybody. And I'm like, oh, Lily, you're saying all of this really wild stuff, let me tell you about why that's wrong. So you have to understand, right? Not everyone is open to having principled conversations, and so you can usually tell by the tenor and the tone. Sometimes people just want to share their opinion with you, and they just want you to know they think you're wrong. So, okay, now we know where you stand. Let's keep moving. And then sometimes people actually want to engage you because they're curious and they want to know. And some people actually do want you to change their minds. So you have to kind of just be discerning about what you engage and what you don't. But ultimately, just remember once again that you don't have to attend every fight that you're invited to.
Right. That totally makes sense. I have Alvin Young. Alvin, did you want to unmute yourself and ask your question for Alicia? Let's see if you can still hear me. Alvin, are you there? Nope, maybe he's not here right now.
Hey, sorry about that, guys.
Okay,
my
great.
Boss actually just pulled me away for a second.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. I do want to, my question, thank you for the presentation. My question really is about the black, you said a hybrid black liberation movement. I wasn't really sure I understood what that meant, or maybe I missed it. And then maybe if you could talk about some of the challenges you face from the black community, since that's where you said you mentioned you were geared towards.
So I said vibrant, not hybrid. So by vibrant, what I mean is something that is active and alive and full of life and inspiring and that becomes a part
of
the
everyday life. Oh, you said vibrant.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. No problem. These headphones, man. What happens? The other thing, I think, just the question that you asked around how do you kind of deal with some of the challenges that for how do we deal with some of the challenges that we face kind of within our own movement is a question really for everyone, right? And the way that I would say it and very simply is that we try to deal with it with as much love as possible, meaning that, you know, when we do the things to each other that we are trying to change, it creates a lot of strife, right? It's painful, and it hurts. And, you know, one of the things that we just know is that hurt people hurt people. So we really try to kind of combat that kind of tension with a lot of love and compassion and openness and willingness to engage each other honestly and constructively. It's not easy, and, you know, it does. It takes a toll. So there's a piece in here that is also really important, which is really just a question about organizing and movement building, which is how do we take care of one another? How do we actually practice and kind of try and model the world that we're trying to live in? And part of how we think that has to happen, right, is by really supporting each other's healing. because of the really intentional and intense ways that the Black Freedom Movement has been attacked for generations and generations, whether we're talking about lynching, whether we're talking about Jim Crow, whether we're talking, quite frankly, about police killings, right, whether we're talking about poverty and unemployment, right, there's a lot of left over, right? There's a lot of trauma that's left over. And so we just try to be as open as possible. We try to think a lot about and practice, right, tools where we build strong relationships with each other across difference. Many of us on the core team are a part of a network called Black Organizing for Leadership and Dignity, which is a kind of leadership development network that is intended to really support and nurture leadership in Black communities. And so, you know, through that experience, we have been very vulnerable with each other about the things that we are scared of, about the things that hurt us, about the things that are our deepest passions. And that's what helps sustain us. So for folks who are thinking about how might I create or develop something like this, it's just really important to understand that it's not just functional, right, but that, you know, fundamentally we are trying to change the world that we live in, and so we also have to change the ways that we are with one another.
Great. Thank you, Alicia. I'm going to do, I see that we're out of time, and there were so many questions, but I want to see if you have any other tips or advice for organizations and the organizers out there on the phone about, you know, using social media and to build your you know, your on-the-ground organizing. Do you have any other last thoughts, bits of advice?
Just the last thing I guess I would say is that I think it's really, really important for folks just to remember that, you know, this is a work in progress and that we are all works in progress. And so, you know, even the best made plans can go awry. So really, when you're thinking about creating something like this, be open to being flexible and think about how you can create structures that can evolve over time and that can involve as many people as possible. The other thing that I really just want to lift up, and I'm so sad that we're almost out of time, is just to say, you know, one of the things that is so powerful, I think, about Black Lives Matter is that it is very simple and profound at the same time. And so there's something about messaging here that is really, really important, and it's something that folks should think about. Now, what I see a lot, and I have also been guilty of this, right, is that sometimes our messaging assumes that people are already with you, and, you know, it can kind of be couched in language that we use with each other, but that not a lot of other people use. So, you know, really, really think about, you know, folks like your grandmother or, you know, your cousin or your uncle, like somebody who maybe doesn't do the work that you do, how would you talk to them to get them involved and to get them on board? And that is really the key to a great message, and it's the key to moving people along with you. The more accessible that it is and the more room and space that it creates for conversation, the better.
That's so great. Thank you so much, Alicia, for just sharing your experiences, your knowledge, your tips, and that your learnings from doing this work. And, you know, just keep doing it. You're doing amazing work. Everyone's doing amazing work, but we're learning. We're all learning this together. So I want to thank you so much for your time in discussing these questions with us. And I want to thank everybody on the webinar for joining us. We I will be recording this. So if you do want the recording, we will just send it out to people who've registered, and you will get a copy of the recording. And I know there was many questions in the chat, so I put my email address. Is it in here? Maybe I didn't. If I didn't, it's alice@progressivetech.org. So if you still have questions, please feel free to email me questions. We'll try to answer, give you a response as best as possible. Again, thank you, everyone, for joining us on this the Reverb Online Series, and we hope to see you for more. Thank you, everyone. Bye now.